Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The late political columnist Molly Ivan said, quote, "If Will Rogers and Mother Jones had a baby, Jim Hightower would be that rambunctious child, mad as hell and with a sense of humor," end quote. Today's guest is Jim Hightower, and his radio commentaries are heard here on KALW Mondays and Tuesdays at 7:30 in the morning. Jim Hightower says that his commentaries take to task the powers that be on behalf of the powers that ought to be: consumers, working families, environmentalists, small businesses, and just plain folks. Jim Hightower is a public speaker, New York Times bestselling author. Every month, he publishes the Hightower Lowdown newsletter, which is described as blasting through the corporate media blockade to lend a populist perspective on the news of the day. Jim Hightower believes that the true political spectrum in this country is not right to left, but top to bottom. Jim Hightower is a Texan, a very proud Texan, a kick-ass populist, as he says. He was raised in Denison, Texas, and Jim Hightower joins us from the Blockhouse Studios in Austin, Texas. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Rose Aguilar. Great to be with you and all those wonderful 91.7ers out there.
Well, it's great to have you, Jim. It's been a while. We had you on, gosh, a couple years ago when you wrote your last book.
Yeah. So, yes, I've been lonely. I'm glad to be back on this great station, the community station.
Well, luckily, we hear you every Monday and Tuesday. And I've been following you lately, Jim, because you are a Bernie Sanders supporter, and you have been introducing him. You've been traveling with him. And I just want to get your take on what happened last night. Bernie Sanders won in Oregon, and he almost won in Kentucky. Both closed primaries.
Yes, which is very remarkable. The rules are pretty much set against somebody like Bernie, but you know, he has defied every rule, or I should really say his supporters have defied all the established rules of politics, including the most sacrosanct of rules, which is that Democrat establishment people saying, well, we have to take the big money just like Republicans do because we need to be competitive. Well, here's a guy who's raised more than $200 million in donations of averaging $27. You know, Rose, you can't buy a president for $27, but you might buy a president who won't be bought. And that's why I've known Bernie for, you know, 30 years or so, and he's just the genuine article. He is exactly what you see and hear is what you would have seen and heard 40 years ago when he was mayor of Burlington, or just a carpenter up in Vermont. He's a genuine populist, you know, champion of ordinary workaday people, and he's really created a new dynamic, a new excitement within the Democratic Party. Now, no matter what the outcome is, he has basically framed the debate around these issues of inequality and excessive corporate power running roughshod over anybody and everybody in their way. So this is reinvigorating a party that I've been part of all of my life. Because it's brought in people who have never been to a Democratic Party function, who are independents, who are young people, and given some excitement and new energy to politics generally.
Last night, he won in Oregon 54% to 45%. In Kentucky, it was a virtual tie. Clinton, 46.8%. Sanders, 46.3%. You've been traveling with Bernie Sanders, Jim. What's really struck me is watching Bernie Sanders go to places that most politicians ignore. He was in Carson, California yesterday. Most of my friends in the Bay Area don't even know where Carson, California is. He was in Sacramento last week. About 20,000 people showed up. He's going to be in Vallejo, California at 4 o'clock today. I mean, I've interviewed so many people, young, older, people who've never been involved in politics before, who are getting involved for the first time. What has been your experience out on the road meeting people who are engaged?
Well, to see and hear the excitement and particularly of young people, but also of older working class folks who have felt dispossessed, basically, by both parties that cater to big money interests, and then having taken those checks, I can tell you from experience that written on the back of a corporate check is the corporate agenda. And so our party had quit talking about big ideas, FDR type of, not only Franklin Roosevelt, but Eleanor Roosevelt kind of politics. And Bernie has brought that back. And that's why people have come to him. You know, Bernie hasn't really created the campaign. He just raised the populist flag, and people came running to it because they have felt kicked out and stomped on, left out. So they want to be a part of building America again, from a grassroots level up, and restoring our sense of egalitarianism, our wonderful founding values of economic fairness and social justice and equal opportunity for all people. So that's what I see happening, and why I'm, you know, involved in this, because it truly is exciting to see real politics, as we say here in Texas, politics with hair on it. You know? there's something at stake. You know, it's not just, you know, little incremental changes of this and that. But, you know, by the way, we will continue to cater to Wall Street and et cetera, because, well, we need their money. Well, we need a different kind of politics than that.
You've been fighting the good fight for a while now, Jim. You worked in Washington at one time as a legislative aide to Senator Ralph Yarborough of Texas. When was
Correct.
That?
That was in the late 60s, 67, 8, and 9. And Ralph Yarborough was the last great progressive Democrat from Texas to serve in the Senate. And we had many good ones then. In the House, for example, Henry B. Gonzalez out of San Antonio, the first Latino elected to Congress from Texas. We had Barbara Jordan out of Houston, Bob Eckhart also out of Houston. So many good people, because we had a good grassroots politics with working class values, basically, and gave people a reason to go vote. You know, turnout is really a function of turn on.
Mm-hmm.
I come to you as a Democrat, but I've seen my party just fail to turn people on because they're modulating their beliefs and modulating their principles, really, so people don't hear them. And if they don't hear message that identifies them in the equation, then, you know, they're not going to be there on Election Day. And so that's the kind of politics that I believe in and have been fighting for my entire life, including much to the amusement of the people of Texas, being elected here to statewide office a couple of times.
Well, so there's a lot to talk about Texas and also Washington. But since you went to Washington at such a young age in the late 60s, what are some of your most memorable moments?
Well, the arrival of my first time in Washington, I was still in college at the time, and believe it or not, it was and what amounts to an intern, I think, of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. When
wow.
I was in college at in Denton, Texas, University of North Texas, I worked pretty much the entire 4 years I was there as an assistant to the general manager of the Denton, Texas Chamber of Commerce. And that led to, they had an initial program. I think seven of us were chosen from around the country to come to Washington and be educated by the Chamber of Commerce. So we spent a week of indoctrination, but myself and a guy from Arizona, and I remember a couple of others too, our eyes were rolling as they were basically giving the corporate line. And, but you know, just arriving there for the first time ever, and the sense of that city, it was so beautiful, and you expected big things. And back then there were giants. I mean, you know, Lyndon Johnson was doing stuff as president, taking great risks. We had senators, name escaping me, but from Oregon, Ernest from Alaska, Phil Hart from Michigan, tremendous people who were, again, big idea people who were willing to take big political risks to help advance the common good in our country. And that's what I sense has basically been lost. Politics has shriveled down to basically money. So having that early experience was very inspiring to me. And then also while I was there, I was inspired by Ralph Nader, who had come out with his, by the way, this is the 50th anniversary of his Unsafe at Any Speed book and the launching of the Nader Raiders. And I was on the outside looking in at that. I wasn't a member of his staff or anything, but was inspired by him and led me to then help create a thing called the Agribusiness Accountability Project. That's a lot of words, but a lot of syllables. but basically looking at corporate power in the food economy and what it was doing to farmers and farm workers and labor throughout the food economy, what it was doing to consumers, to the environment, and to food itself, and led us to Susan DeMarco and I to write a book called Hard Tomatoes, Hard Times that sparked quite a bit of activity, U.S. Senate hearings, and et cetera, into the corporatization of our land-grant college system.
And since we were talking about your time in Denton, one of our listeners, Rachel, wants to know if you were student president back then at the University of North Texas in Denton.
I was, actually. I was student body president, and I had been in the campus politics from my freshman year on forward. So you've got to beware of student politicians because they might turn into general politicians down the road, and that did happen to me. But it was for a purpose. And the purpose was to see if we couldn't help just ordinary people in our country, put government to work, being an actual benefit for workaday people, and we did that, and that began with my little stint there as a student body president at North Texas.
Today we're speaking with Jim Hightower, self-described kick-ass populist. You hear his radio commentaries here on KALW on Mondays and Tuesdays at 7:30 in the morning. Jim has written many books. He still publishes the Hightower Lowdown newsletter. It's described as blasting through the corporate media blockade to lend a populist perspective on the news of the day. And if you have any questions or comments for Jim Hightower, he's been fighting the good fight for a long time, as you just heard. He went to Washington in the late 60s to be an aide, and then he went back to Texas. He has served as the agriculture commissioner. He was there from 83 to 91, and he gives talks across the country. He's been traveling with Bernie Sanders. So we'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jim, because you do have so much experience in politics and you've seen so many changes, what do you think about what's happening with Bernie right now? I mean, a lot of Democrats, probably all of them, the major Dems, are telling him to just get out of the race. They're really angry about what's happening. We're hearing news about what happened in Nevada. The Democratic Party and Sanders supporters really erupted into protest at the Nevada convention on Saturday. They believe that the rules were changed abruptly and that 64 Sanders supporters were not given their delegate status. They were denied their status. And, you know, we're getting news that the state party chair there, Roberta Lang, she says she received death threats. State party headquarters were vandalized. What do you make of all this?
Well, to start with, the rules were in fact rigged, and that's where the anger came from. You know, people don't like being cheated, and they do react to it. Now, they should not react with any kind of violence. I am against that, but nonetheless, the party apparatus around the country overwhelmingly has been very actively behind Hillary and trying to stall Bernie's advance. And now we have these calls for Bernie to get out of the race. Well, that's a complete misunderstanding of why Bernie is in the race. He is in the race to make real change in America. He calls it a revolution, whatever title you want to put on it. Folks are in rebellion against the political and economic establishment for obvious reason. The workaday people have been knocked down and kicked out of the system economically and politically. And that includes now the middle class. You know, we're pretty experienced in our country of holding down poor people, but it's a whole new game in my lifetime, at least, to to have this massive effort to reduce the middle class down to near poverty or actually into poverty. And so we're Americans. We are going to respond to that. And so those who say, well, Bernie should get out, don't understand that he's not in this race just to be president, but to actually make change, to make a difference, and to bring these outsiders inside. That is the only way, Rose, that I believe that you make change in America, is you've got to be squarely on the side of the folks you really want to help. And that means being willing to be against those who are running over those that you want to help. I'll give you a quick story. When I was ag commissioner, we enacted new regulations on pesticides. I had the authority as ag commissioner to regulate pesticides, and we thought, well, having the power, what if we gave it a try? Mm-hmm. You know, previous administrations had not. Mm-hmm. So farm workers were endangered. In fact, one had died the year before I ran for this office. And suburban communities living up against the cotton fields, they were endangered. Farmers themselves had an enormous cancer rate. The water was polluted. And so it was a huge problem. So we did pesticide regulations. And then we also launched the first state in the country to be the state authorizer of a certifier, rather, of organic production. So we got behind that. In those years, in the 1980s, at Texas A&M, you were not allowed to, as a professor, to use the word organic in class.
Wow.
The head of ag programs at Texas A&M wanted to meet with me, but we had to meet in a motel because he didn't want to be seen publicly meeting with me. So, I mean, this was the level of stuff going on. So So this infuriated the chemical lobby and the Farm Bureau, and so they came after me. We had a Republican governor, and he got behind legislation that one would make ag commissioner appointed by the governor rather than elected, and then two would move the pesticide authority out of that office. And so they held a hearing, and it was in a little room, expecting to slide this thing right on through, these two bills. They had to move the hearing to the House chamber, the biggest room in our Capitol. And they had to do that because my first witness was Willie Nelson. My second witness was Barbara Jordan. my third witness was the chairwoman of the Dallas Republican organization, women's organization, because it turns out that Republicans don't want their babies eating pesticides either. Hmm. So what we did there, so at the end of that hearing, couldn't get anybody on the committee even to make the motion to pass those two bills. They didn't want to be seen publicly doing that. So we beat them, but we beat them by coming from the outside, bringing those outsiders in. If I'd done the normal thing and just fought inside, that's where the lobby lives. That's where the money lives, and that's where they control. But by bringing the outsiders in, we were able to defeat this effort and continue to expand organic production in our state.
You know what, Jim, when I first read that you were twice elected Texas Agriculture Commissioner, you served from 83 to 91, my first question and thought was, wow, why did Jim Hightower want to be in that position?
Two things. First of all, it was a wonderful office. Myself and some key folks who were backing me, we dug into various state offices to see what power might be there that could be used. And it turns out the Ag Department was a very progressive organization, had a lot of authority to do things that were not being done. So it was an office worth winning. And then the second thing is that I wanted to show that my populist beliefs, which I'd written about and talked about early in my life in Washington with Senator Yarborough and speeches I was given, this agribusiness project I ran and et cetera, I wanted to see if that would really work in politics, in real-life politics. Texas had turned conservative. The liberals thought that Texas had become right-wing. But in fact, I knew they were talking about people like my father. a small business guy in Denison, Texas. And if you knocked on his door and said, are you a liberal or a conservative, he would have said, well, I'm a conservative. But if you talked about what the bank holding companies were doing to small businesses like him, if you talked about what Walmart was doing to his business, if you talked about what the oil lobby was doing to the legislature, then you scratched William Jennings Bryan. You know, that's who he became. So I knew that as you said in your introduction, the real politics in America is not right to left. That's theory. But it's top to bottom. That's experience. That's your zip code. You know where you live. And the vast majority of people are not in shouting distance of those powers at the top, whether they call themselves Republican or Democrat. So I wanted to show that you could run a race. Much as Bernie's showing there's another way to do national politics, I wanted to show here in Texas that you could run a race without big money. You could run a race squarely on populist issues and rally a constituency. And we put together a coalition of farmers, family farmers, with environmentalists, with labor, with consumer interests, and just regular folks, and indeed defeated the incumbent ag commissioner in the first race, and then reelected and on down the road, and enabling us to go do these things. So we showed that that kind of politics does work, and then we showed that once in office, you can be as bold as you want to be. Actually, and I brought one attraction of this office was it had 600 employees. You know, that's quite a few folks. Mm. So if you've got real resources. You had a, I forget what it was, $25 million or so annual budget. You had 13 district offices, had a state airplane. You know, so you had resources. You could go out and do things and excite people. And so we brought in a different kind of a staff that were both community organizers but also marketing people and created these co-ops to sell the production of Latino and African-American farmers directly to Kroger's in the cities and developed a whole series. There were no farmers markets in the state at the time, so we brought in some staff that knew how to create farmers markets and went out and worked with local people to, within a couple of years, we had 100 of them around the state because people wanted to do this. And so our job was not to run anything, was not to own the production. Our job was to be a catalyst, be a resource for them, give them the tools, and then they'd pick them up and put them to work and make a difference.
Hmm. Jim, we're going to go to break really quickly, but Texas has very low voter turnout, just like the rest of the country. A lot of people believe that if Texans actually voted, it could flip back to Democrat. Do you believe that?
I do indeed believe that. Again, though, turnout is a product of turn-on. So our party is now doing that kind of grassroots organizing again that it had abandoned for about 30 years. So we're getting back to that and getting back to those populist issues. And with that, we will indeed turn it over. It's not just a function of having the Latino community come of age and become the majority, and therefore Texas will just automatically switch over. That's not the case. We have to make a case to those folks and give them a reason to vote, as we're also giving a reason to the people who have quit voting in our state.
Today we're speaking with Texan populist Jim Hightower. You hear Jim's commentaries on Mondays and Tuesdays here on KALW at 7:30 a.m. And this is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
I'm Matt Martin here with Your Call producer Laura Flynn, asking you to support the station that brings you Your Call, that brings you Jim Hightower, and brings it to you non-commercial and listener-supported. The number to call, 800-525-9917. This is the penultimate day of our campaign. We're aiming to end it tomorrow at 6 p.m. Help us end it strong with a call or a click at KALW.org.
And why you should do that is because every week on KLW, we hear Jim Hightower's commentary on national politics and corporate influence on our lawmakers. Jim Hightower connects the influence, how that type of money has on our politics every week. He takes on coal barons, Uber and Lyft, Goldman Sachs, and politicians. And these are the kinds of voices you hear on Your Call, independent voices challenging the powers that be. And you can support Your Call by going to klw.org and click donate or you can call 800-525-9917. Again, that's 800-525-9917.
This is a station where we're always listening to one another and listening to what's on the air. Something that's on NPR will make us think, oh, that relates to something that was on Jim Hightower's commentary. We should talk about that on Your Call. It's an ecosystem. You keep it strong with your support. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
I think of it as sort of a town hall meeting where you can call and ask your own question or comments. You can call now and ask Jim questions directly, and you got to support that through by going to KALW.org and clicking the Donate Now button or calling 800-525-9917.
We're going back to the program, back to Rose's conversation with Jim Hightower. We thank everyone who's calling. Join them, KALW.org or 800-525-9917.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are joined by Texan populist Jim Hightower. And if you have a question or a comment for Jim, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also drop us an email, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Roger in San Francisco. Hi, Roger. Welcome to the show. Hi, Roger.
Yes.
Hi,
go
ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Jim, I'd like to compliment you. You do a wonderful job in your commentaries. But I see a shade or a reflection in the Nader-Gore race. I just see that what you're doing is splitting the Democratic Party. And what's going to happen to those young people? They're just going to throw up their hands and say, I'm through with politics. I'm not going to vote. And that's going to leave the door open for the Republicans to march in again. Bernie would do well if he would calm his people down and emphasize supporting the party, supporting Clinton, maybe the answer. We cannot afford to lose the Supreme Court. A lot of things will be lost that people are need in this country if that happens. So, Jim, I believe that you are a good person. I also believe Bernie's a good person. But the world has suffered a lot with good people. So what I'm just saying is that it might be wise to tone it down a little bit and try to support Clinton.
Well, thank you, Roger. That's what almost everyone in the Democratic Party is saying. What do you think, Jim?
Well, that is the established line of the party. It has always been, and the whole idea of the Bernie campaign that has been created not by Bernie but by people who actually support him is that the business as usual and politics as usual is leaving too many Americans out, leaving the majority out. And they're saying, no, we're not going to be just shut out. We want to create a new politics that really does represent the ordinary workaday people of our country. So that's what we have going. And those young people are not going to go away because the Bernie effort is not going to go away. Let's say that Bernie is not going to be the nominee, that Hillary Clinton will be. Well, you know, I will then support Hillary Clinton. Bernie will, too. Many of those supporters, however, will not. Bernie can't control them. But we're going to continue to build the movement based on what we've remarkable achievements in the last several months of this Bernie Sanders campaign of advancing the progressive cause and the progressive discussion. We wouldn't be talking about Wall Street being busting up Wall Street. We wouldn't be talking about the need for major infrastructure. We wouldn't be talking about Medicare for all. We wouldn't be talking about these things except Bernie ran. People got excited by that kind of thing, and they're involved. We're going to stay involved. There will be an organization come out. This is not like, you know, after Jesse Jackson's run, after Nader's run, Jerry Brown's run for president, Howard Dean even. No real organization came out of those things because the principals didn't really stick with it. Bernie is committed to that, and he's got these young, really very, very skilled and committed to fundamental progressive values, not just programs, but values themselves. And those are very positive values. The Democratic Party used to be based on those values, and so we're wanting to get it back to that. So while the November election is one thing, it's what's going to happen after that election that we all care about. And of course, you know, I mean, the freak show over on the other side, you know, where they got the Donald and the Cruiser and Sleepy, Sneezy, Dopey, Curly, and Moe, you know, running over there. So we're not, you know, we're going to oppose that thing. But you'd got to do that on real principle, not just, please stick with the party. Mm. Well, we've stuck with the party before, and the party gave us NAFTA. Yeah. The party gave us the Trans-Pacific Partnership now. They're trying to shove that down our throat. The party gave us no movement on Citizen United, no movement on public financing of election, no real action on dealing with the massive debt that students are having to incur to do what they're told they're supposed to do, which is go get the best education you possibly can. So these are the kind of things that motivate the Sanders campaign. It's certainly not any desire to hurt the Democratic Party, to hurt Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton, for that matter. It is a matter to create a real politics of working stiffs again. That's on the side of dirt farmers and consumers, and environmentalists, and the rest of it. But squarely on their side, not just when it's convenient and if corporations don't mind.
Hmm. Well, thanks for calling, Roger. We have sort of a related call from Carol in Woodside. Hi, Carol. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. I'm glad. I think maybe my answer comes from what you were already talking about, but I'm on the phone waiting to get my call, so I miss it. Anyway, my question is, and this is really serious for me, I really like Bernie, but it's not because of him as a person. I think he's fine. I like him as a person, what you can see of him. But I like what he stands for. It's like, finally, I've got someone who is speaking out on things that I care about in the way that I care about. There hasn't been anyone for me. And so I'm so determined to vote for Bernie that if he doesn't get it, and that's what they're saying, that Hillary is going to end up as the nominee because of all the shenanigans and everything, I won't vote for Hillary. And so what I'm asking for is I'm asking for you to change my mind, because I have people who, friends who are saying, you know, what about the Supreme Court and so forth and so on. Mm-hmm. But I need you to...
Well, you know, I can't say anything to you that you're not already grasping, and that is things like the Supreme Court are worth preventing the Donnie Trump school from controlling, and that'll change all of our lives right there. So sometimes a negative stance is the positive stance to take. But more important is that you don't quit voting, that you get involved. For example, we've got some wonderful people that are part of the Bernie campaign and others that are not part of it who are running for Congress that really are progressive. They're running for state senate, and they're going to be running for mayor, and et cetera. So we've got a long term view here of a building a populist movement that indeed can actually move, that isn't just a movement in name, just some letterhead or something, but is actually people organizing at a local level, electing good people and moving those people up. That's what a movement actually does. So that's what Bernie has started. So we're in it for the long haul. And for the movement itself, not just for a particular office.
Well, thank you for calling in. And just a reminder, whenever I have a chance on your call, we have our primary in California on June 7th. You have to be registered by May 23rd, and you really need to check your registration to be sure that you're registered correctly, depending on how you want to vote. And as Jim said, we've got the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee race here in San Francisco. It's really important. We're going to talk about it on Monday. In order to vote in that race in San Francisco, you have to be a Democrat. You can't be a Green. You can't be no party preference. You have to be a Democrat. So be sure to check your registration by May 23rd. The other really important piece of information, and Jim, this just speaks to the confusion about the system. If you get a mail-in ballot and you're no party preference, you will not see a president on your ballot. You have to call and get a Democratic ballot, or you have to go vote in person. I would say go vote in person. And I'm not even talking about Republicans, because if you're no party preference, you can't vote for a Republican anyway. But Jim, this is also confusing. People don't know. They have to really do their homework, which of course they should. But the rules change. A lot of independents haven't been able to vote so far. I mean, we've done a lot of shows about this. I mean, given your experience, what would you like to see to simplify our voting system?
Well, make it simple. Why a May 23rd date to register? Why can't you register on the day of the election itself?
Yep.
And why do we have an election day? Why don't we have an election week? And, you know, like Oregon does. Why don't we have access for candidates to free media? The broadcast waves belong to us, the people. Why do we let corporations control that? Why don't we have public financing of our elections so just regular people can run for office again? The rules are, why do we have super delegates? Mm. I was one once, by the way,
yeah.
Confession time. But I wasn't, it wasn't that, that was in the Clinton, first Clinton election. So that was a done deal. So it wasn't, I wasn't taking a seat away from anybody, and I did make sure of that. But nonetheless, we don't, the Democratic Party, the Democrat part of that needs to make clear that no, we're not going to have elites choosing who gets to be our nominee. So the whole process has to be opened up. And by the way, that's something that that we'll be fighting for on the Bernie side within the Democratic Party at the convention and the rules meetings and the platform committee and all that, is to democratize the Democratic Party's election process.
Well, thank you again for calling in. Let's go next to Paul in Vallejo. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much. I just want to identify myself generationally as 79 years old. So I want to hear what Mr. Hightower has to say about this. I was first attracted to Barack Obama because of his age, because of the fact that he was not brought up during the Cold War era, that his whole thinking process is different. And now we've stepped back into the old generation, as far as I'm concerned. It actually doesn't endear me. I understand what you're saying about Bernie is what he was when he was mayor of Burlington. However, that does not make me hopeful that somebody is forward-looking and is actually going to bring a different worldview to international relations. And I think international relations are just as equally as, if not more so, important than income inequality. They are just, they're equal legs on the chair.
Yeah, I can go along with the leg theory there. But Bernie may be the oldest candidate in the race, but he is also the youngest candidate in the race. And that's why he's winning like 80% of the under 30 age voters. He has the vision. He has the appeal that they want to hear. Like our previous caller says, she's been waiting a long time for somebody to step forward and say the kind of things that appeal directly to her, that relate directly to her and people she knows like her. That's why the Bernie race is so important. He does have that vision, including on international policy. I don't know. To me, just look at what he's saying on international affairs and on all the rest of it, and it's way beyond what anyone else is saying in terms of its progressive vision and its big vision. Again, where did all the big stuff go? You know, we used to be a nation that was can do. You know, by golly, we'll just roll up our sleeves and somehow or other we'll get this thing done, and that was everything from poverty to infrastructure. I mean, it's a crying shame that a nation as wealthy as we are, the richest nation in the history of the world, that we allow our infrastructure to just completely come apart. No business would do that. No homeowner would do that. But we are as a nation, and we have the Republicans in Congress right now refusing even to put money out for the Zika crisis that we face in this country. We can't pretend it's not there because they say, well, ideologically, we don't want more government spending. Well, ideology be damned. You know, we have real problems, and money is one way to address that, but along with money should be rallying of the people, the grassroots people, to do the work themselves, to join in a national effort for the common good. And we haven't been making appeals like that for decades now, but Bernie is making an appeal like that, which is why I think he's doing so well.
Today we're joined by Texan populist Jim Hightower. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Thank you for calling, Paul. Let's go next to Travis in Oakland. Hi, Travis. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Honored to be on the show with you guys. I was wondering if I could get Mr. Hightower's take on the effect that the delegates will play in shaping the party platform at the convention. I heard a really interesting piece with John Nichols from The Nation magazine, where he was describing the importance of the party platform process. And basically, even if Bernie doesn't get the nomination, the more votes he has, the more delegates he has at the convention, the more power that basically the movement has to shape the party platform. I'd love to hear your comments on that.
All right. Thank you. Jim, were you able to hear Travis?
Yeah,
okay.
I did.
Great.
I got the essence of what he's asking about the platform, and that's the importance of Bernie staying in the race because people want the kind of issues that he's talking about to become the Democratic Party. So the more delegates he amasses, the more punch he's going to have in Philadelphia at the convention to guide the platform. I intend to be somewhat involved in that process myself. And then the platform, to me, I mean, I think most of our listeners realize that platforms are very nice documents and statements, but presidents don't generally go along with whatever the platform said. But nonetheless, it's important to make the statement and then to build on that. So Bernie's platform, there'll be two platforms. Bernie's, here's our view, our populist take on what's needed for America, on domestic issues, international issues, etc. Then there will be whatever we're able to achieve in the Democratic Party platform process. We will win some of that. We might even win a lot of that. And that will make a statement to the supporters of Bernie and those who are watching from the outside and think, well, I don't know if this is really going to be anything. But it makes a statement that we're building for the future. And so we want to put the best platform forward that we can, and that'll be a compromise platform. But that doesn't mean we're taking our platform off the table either. That'll continue after the November election. We're going to continue to build at a local level, from school board and city council, all the way up through Congress and Senate, and then toward another presidential bid down the road. But that's got to come from the grassroots. You don't really build from the top down, a real political movement. And Bernie knows that. He's energized a movement and permitted, if you will, a movement to build again. People might believe that it can become something. And so that platform is a step in that direction. And for those, you know, these young people are not going to go away. I don't know what they're going to do in November, but they're going to stay active, mm-hmm. and we intend to create a framework with them that will increase their activity and let them achieve victories. They may be local victories, but those are important as well. And then keep building for the future. You know, Willie Nelson said that the early bird might get the worm, but it's the second mouse that gets the cheese. I'll just let our listeners think about that a little bit. but the point is, you've got to persevere. You're not going to win just everything from the first time out.
Hmm. All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Travis. Let's hear next from Tom in San Francisco. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Mr. Hightower. I just love your voice. I could listen all day long. Next, Bernie's issues. He hits the bullseye in what the U.S. needs as a country. I figure that intelligence will carry over to foreign affairs if he does become the president. The other aspect, and the question I'm going to ask you, is what exactly should the country do to include the large and growing number of independent voters, instead of letting the two parties control their monopolies of the political life? Can they open their doors, or is it strictly going to be a third party establishment, which is going to be very, very hard to do with the Corporation of America? And thank you for your time and your efforts.
Thank you. Well, a couple of answers. One, yes, I mean, we're trying to open the Democratic Party's doors to those independent voters. And by the way, Bernie is winning the overwhelming majority of independents in this primary race, as well as of young people who overwhelmingly are independent voters. Just to say, well, we just want Democrats, well, that's a small percentage of the American electorate these days. And so we're trying to have the kind of politics that involves them, excites them, energizes and moves them to build this future. I hope it's going to be done through the Democratic Party, and that's why we're making the effort as Democrats. Longer term, second part of my answer to you is I think we're now a country that needs to begin to address structural issues within our election system. You can't have a third party or a fourth or a fifth party, a multi-party system, for example, without proportional representation being brought in. That's a debate we need to begin to have, because otherwise you're shutting out – we have been now for 30 years shutting out the majority of voters, and you said the growing number of independents, they are by far the largest segment of the electorate in our country today.
Yes.
So two approaches.
Yep, they definitely are in California. Jim, we don't have much time left, but earlier in the show you talked about working in Washington as a young man in the late 60s. And, I mean, you've been fighting the fight for decades. How do you continue to stay healthy, and what keeps you going?
I drink a lot of beer.
Ah!
What keeps me moving, what keeps me excited even, is the people themselves. I'm a pretty lucky duck. I do a lot of traveling. Been just about every place that's got a zip code, I think. And again, as you indicated about Bernie, I don't just go to Berkeley and the Greenwich Village in New York or even Austin and Boulder. I go in Fresno, and I go out into Grass Valley. Just recently spoke up there. So I get out there where regular people are, and I just find the people just majestic. I mean, they believe that things are possible, and if they sense that they can make a difference at a local level or state level, they jump in. And so that gives me great inspiration and great hope for our country. So the resource of human resources are still very, very strong in our country. But we have to appeal to those and give those resources a way to express themselves. And this campaign has come along and given us that opportunity. So that's why I'm involved in it. But I get my strength from, if I got all my news from even the New York Times or the nightly news shows on TV, I mean, I would be horribly depressed. But getting out there in the countryside, I see a different world than what we're told we live in.
Hmm. Well, keep drinking beer, Jim, because we need you around for a while longer. Jim Hightower is a Texan populist. You can hear his commentaries Mondays and Tuesdays on KALW at 7:30 a.m. Jim, thank you so much for joining us.
Great show, Rose. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. And Jim Hightower is going to stick around for us as we ask for your support of KALW. And I'm joined in studio by General Manager Matt Martin. Mm-hmm. Hi, Matt.
And we have had tremendous support from listeners this hour. Thank you so much to all the people who've already gotten in touch and given their support. And it's good because we have a challenge during this hour. A few listeners have come together. David Kerp in Berkeley, big fan of your call. Krista Terstig in Foster City, who says she loves Rose Aguilar, and Eve Lynch in San Francisco, a great KALW supporter, have put forward $750 and said that if 25 people will support this station during this hour, they will give that money to KALW. We want to take them up on that challenge. It's the second to the last day of our campaign, aiming to end it tomorrow at 6 p.m. We've already had 11 people contribute during this hour. Such incredible support. And right now is a great time to make your call or click.
Thank you so much for that support. 800-525-9917. You can also go online to kalw.org. We've had such a great morning. Thank you so much for all of your support. 800-525-9917. Your support makes this possible to be able to hear Jim Hightower's commentaries Monday and Tuesday morning and have Jim on your call for an hour. Jim, you have seen so many changes in the media. What is it about local independent radio that is so important to you?
Well, it's got integrity. It has diversity, and it has gumption, and that's why I believe that community radio has been succeeding while a lot of the corporate media has been faltering and going by the way. You know, it's an election every day on the media, broadcast media. People can choose to tune into this or they can choose to turn into Rush Limbaugh and the huge networks of radio consortiums. So there's a motel here in Austin called the Austin Motel. It's an old long time, decades old, been refurbished, and it's very, very nice. But they have a great sign out front. It says, no additives, no preservatives, corporate free since 1938.
Nice.
And that's what this station is, you know, because the listener, you are the preservative of KALW, and you're the power within it, not some corporate advertiser. So I just urge you to get radioactive. I think we should all be radioactive, and this is the station that one wants you to do that because it belongs to you. So it nurtures you just as you must nurture it.
And Jim, we're not quite as old as the Austin Motel, but we have been around since 1941 here at KALW, and we're so glad to be listener-supported, community-based for all that time. Every single call from people like Lisa Boren in San Francisco, Denise Hart in Berkeley, Fizette Curran, also in Berkeley, who became a sustaining member. Each of these people makes this happen. Join them. Make sure we make it to this challenge. Close out this drive as a success. KALW.org or 800-525-9917.
800-525-9917. As Jim said, local independent radio has gumption. That's a word that we need to use more often. 800-525-9917.
Integrity. That's a word we should also use more often. It's important. 800-525-9917.
And we've got a challenge from three very generous listeners. David Kerp in Berkeley, Krista Terstige in Foster City, and Eve Lynch in San Francisco. Thank you so much for supporting KALW and your call. 800-525-9917. You can also go online to kalw.org.
This is a time when every person who's glad Jim Hightower's voice is on KALW, as has been since well before I was general manager, this is the time to show your support and say, Jim, we appreciate your work. KALW, we appreciate that there's a place in the Bay Area that brings his commentaries to everybody. 800-525-9917. Thanks to Catherine Klar in Berkeley, longtime supporter of the station, who said that this interview today was a gem. She wanted to give a little more, although she's already a sustaining member. Thank you, Catherine, for doing that. KALW.org, 800-525-9917.
800-525-9917. You can also go online to KALW.org. Because of you, we can bring Jim to the air. And Jim, we had full lines, tons of emails. People really want to talk about what's happening right now in this country. And that is another reason why a station like KALW is so important. Because, Jim, you get to talk to all of these listeners.
Yeah, it's marvelous, just absolutely marvelous, and which is why I like doing this. You know, to me, you know, KALW is not an electronic device. it's not some cold thing out there. It's a habitat that nurtures us, and we in turn have got to nurture it. So we're all a part of the whole here, and the whole of our effort is greater than the sum of its parts. And that's the reason that I urge people to do call in, and let's get this matching money coming our way this morning, for this very hour. So join us in the habitat, and it will keep you warm and healthy and happy.
Preserve this radio habitat for independent ideas, thoughts, information. Your support at 800-525-9917 keeps KALW San Francisco strong.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks so much for joining us.